scrubbed clean as a man could get, in the desert, Deaton tugged Tibbs's hat down firmly on his head and looked at himself in the mirror. It had been a long time since he'd run a maneuver like this, and every fiber of his being was screaming at him to cut his losses and scramble. But there was Tibbs at his side, and the Doppel's threat hung over him like a noxious cloud. She'd lost someone. Deaton had no doubt of that. This woman, so long living a peaceable life in the sheltering rock of Aransa, had not suddenly decided to bring her talent to bear against the entire city on a whim. Grief. Grief was the most persuasive of motivators. He had to see this to the end, and he was increasingly running out of viable options. Time to stick his neck out.
How do I look, Tibbs?
Pompous and dirty. Same as always.
You always know how to lift a man's spirits.
I aim to please.
Let's go, then.
He led the way out of their shabby inn and up the steps to the next level. And the next. The gray-coated level guards didn't pay them any mind. Deaton and Tibbs didn't look like thieves, after all. They never did. On the warehouse level, he caught sight of a sleek ship making its way into port, a Valathian personal cruiser, its dark wood hull gleaming in the growing light. Probably some highbrow ponce in to give Thratia his blessing. In the road just before Thratia's compound, Deaton hesitated, glancing sideways to catch Tibbs's eye. Tibbs gave him a nod, a tip of the head so subtle that any other soul would have missed it. They strode forward, in step, toward the stony arms which encircled Thratia's home. Her guards seemed to have expected them, because all it took was a cursory exchange of names to get the gates swung open. They hadn't even gotten the traditional pat-down, which was well enough, because each of them had daggers tucked in the tops of their boots and hidden away in their sleeves. Nor had they found his little jar of sap glue, which he felt made a rather obvious bulge in the side of his jacket. One of the blank-faced guards led them the long way around, through a dim hallway. The lamps were gone, replaced with cheap beeswax candles, and the light they put off was warm and cloying. The guard abandoned them at Thratia's grand hall. The melange of the fete's revelry had been replaced with great iron and wood machines, copper bellies belching steam into the cavernous chamber. Men and women in tight-fitting, sleeveless tunics, with their hair pulled back in no-nonsense buns, tended the machines, feeding barkboard paper in one end and examining it as it came out the other. Deaton crept forward, peering through the obscuring steam to make out what it was they were doing. Piles of posters leaned against the edge of the machines, Thratia's sharp face obvious even in silhouette. He couldn't make out the words, but he could guess the meaning easily enough. He flicked his gaze from pile to pile, estimating their number, more than she could possibly need for Aransa. The ex-commodore stepped between him and those machines, both brows raised in sharp irritation.
Evening, Commodore.
It'll be warden soon, Hunding.
She put her fists on her hips, and he saw she was dressed much the same as she had been for the party. He doubted she changed much at all.
If you can keep the Larkspur to yourself.
Are you attempting to threaten me?
I'm offering you a chance to save face, throat slitter. I don't give a shit who ends up warming Fod's chair, but I do care very much about losing.
What exactly would you lose?
There's a Doppel in this city, and she is going to steal the Larkspur.
Just how do you know all that?
You remember Ripka arresting me at your lovely banquet?
Yes.
And do you remember Ripka keeping an eye on the party all evening?
Yes.
The Ripka who walked me out your back door was a Doppel, I'm afraid. And I spent an unearned night in the clink because of her. I am not a forgiving man, Thratia. I know her plans, and I want her to fail.
And just how do you propose to keep my ship safe from this nefarious creature?
Why, you're going to put me in charge of your security staff.
I already know full well there is a Doppel in the city, Hunding. What I'm not buying is that I'd risk getting tangled up with someone like you.
I was afraid of that. What if I could produce an independent party who happened to see Ripka in the dance hall at the same time I was being arrested?
Really? Who could you find that's impartial?
Oh, she's partial, but not in my favor. I want you to send old Halva Erst a calling card.
What will the Lady Erst have to say about it?
Lady Erst witnessed my conversation with the watch captain while Deaton was being detained.
Also, I left her at the altar.
Ooh. This is a lovely way to start the morning. Bring me the Lady Halva Erst. No delays.
When the lady in question arrived at Thratia's estate, she spied Deaton and clenched her lily-soft fists.
You! You swine! You heartless chicken-livered goat!
Really, my dear, try to stick to one theme of animal.
I want him thrown to the blackwash, Warden. This man is a mongrel, and I...
Another animal?
Be silent! You lost the right to say anything at all to me when you left me without so much as a peep. I thought you were dead.
Is that a wedding ring on your finger?
Not that it's any of your business, but I've married Cranston Wells. He's a gentleman.
Cranston? Your father hated that slag. Oh.
Deaton sifted through memories long since buried, recalling Halva's two eager proclamations. The strange man who had leapt over the lady's garden wall, red in the face and screaming mad. Cranston Wells. That's who it must have been. A man so slack-witted her father would never have permitted the match. Unless, of course, Daddy Erst felt he and his daughter had barely escaped a much more dire pairing.
You used me!
Try to control yourself, my dear.
As entertaining as this is, I am a busy woman.
Halva ducked her head and dropped a low curtsy to Thratia, who didn't seem to care one whit.
Now, young lady, I need you to answer me honestly. Do you understand?
Yes, Warden.
I'm not the Warden yet.
Daddy said it's only a matter of time.
That may be true, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Now, did you see Watch Captain Leshy last night at the party?
I did. She was lingering on the second-story balcony, drinking herself stupid with that rat.
It wasn't like that at all. It was just a drink or two, not the whole bottle or nothing.
I don't care about your drinking habits, Tibble. Did she leave the balcony at any point, Halva?
No, not until the band stopped playing. Then she went down to break up a fight.
There was a fight at my party?
Oh, just a tiff over a girl.
Very well. You can go now, Lady Est.
But what about him?
Go now, before you make a fool of yourself. Off with you.
Huh.
Lady Wells, nay Erst, expanded her sun parasol with vigor. She strode from the room, leaving a trail of jasmine perfume in her ruffled wake.
Strange girl. I've no idea what you saw in her.
I really did want her father's atlas.
Well, mongrel, I believe the Doppel has taken some interest in your pathetic hide.
Excellent. We will take the most wonderful care of your gorgeous ship.
Do you think me cruel, Hunding? Heartless? Maniacal, perhaps?
I never said anything.
You'd be correct in many ways, few of which you understand. You might think all those things of me, Hunding, but don't ever think me stupid.
I would never say...
I know you think me a poor fit for a ranser, you and your new creature friend, no doubt. No, don't protest. Play at ignorance all you like, and ignorant you may be, but you're enamored of the very idea of the Doppel, aren't you? It's what you want to be, what you wish you were. An independent element moving against the stability of the Empire. But you're not. You never will be.
Thratia stepped close to Deaton and pressed her hand over his mouth and gripped hard.
You're clever. I'll grant you that. And I don't believe those rumors that you've gone cracked in the head. Not wholly. You're scared. I see it in the way you move. Hands shaping half-formed thoughts. Shoulders closed forward in defense, even while your hips stay open, ready to run. I've made a study of it. The way people stand and the way they say what they want you to think they think. You jump from town to town, harassing anything with even the slightest stink of the Empire on it, but never, never reaching your hand out to harangue the real seed of your terror. I don't know what happened to change you, Hunding. I don't believe losing your self-sense alone did it. Whatever happened to you, know this. That creature is little more than a murderer. Justified, possibly, I have no idea, nor do I care. But that thing has put terror in the hearts of the Aransan people. So you think very hard. Who's better for the city? The woman the people want to elect? Or The choice of a man so addled he can't tell a flower from a thorn. If it's the Larkspur you want to watch over, then you may have it.
She shoved him away and jerked her chin toward a militiaman.
Take them to the Larkspur. Let them be extra bait upon the trap. Do not, under any circumstances, allow them to leave the dock or this compound. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Heavy hands closed around Deaton's arms, dragging him away. She turned her back on them, forgetting them the moment they were out of sight. But he saw the way her shoulders slumped. He frowned, mind racing, as he was dragged back, Tibbs hauled along beside him.
Extra bait, she said. But what's the original? The ship? Would she really risk her treasure just to capture one doppel?
What's the hurry, Throttia?
She paused and turned back, face impassive. But her head was tilted forward, just the tiniest bit. She was listening.
You worried it's your head she's coming for next?
Throttia just smirked, an uncontrolled reaction. She didn't fear for her own life, then. The doors to the dock opened behind him. The threshold loomed above his head.
Afraid of breaking contract?
Her head tipped back, but her expression remained smooth, placid. A mask locked into place.
Gotcha.
The militiamen threw him to the floor of the familiar U-dock. Throtty had made a deal with the Empire that had kicked her loose, and Deaton reckoned he knew just what those terms were. They'd look the other way as she vaulted to power, perhaps provide some backing in the form of grain or steel, and she'd get those pesky rumors of a doppel running loose cleaned up. Trouble was, the doppel was proving too slippery even for Thratia's clutching hands. For the doppel's sake, he prayed to clear skies that the Whitecoats hadn't caught wind of Thratia's little bargain. Deaton pushed himself to his feet. Tibble sat on the ground, glaring at him.
Now what?
Deaton looked around. The place was the same as he'd last seen it, the Larkspur anchored between the loving arms of the open-air dock. He peered over the edge and swallowed at the drop to the ground below. No way either of them would survive that tumble, and the climb down was too sheer to risk.
Don't suppose the servant's door is unlocked?
Tibbs hauled himself to his feet. Though they both knew it'd lead nowhere, Tibbs wandered over and gave the handle a twist, just in case. Nothing.
Well, we're here.
There is one way out.
Their attention drifted to the Larkspur, hovering peacefully in the warm morning light.
That ship can only be flown by a crew of five, or a very strong cell-sensitive.
Indeed.
Tibble sauntered toward the ship and crossed the gangplank. He stood upon the deck, casting an inquisitive eye over it. He pulled out his notebook and charcoal pencil.
Too bad we don't have either of those things.
Too bad.
Deaton shook himself and crossed the plank. After a few moments rummaging, Deaton gathered up a stretch of spare sailcloth and a slender rope. He plunked these materials down in the center of the deck and pulled out the knife he didn't really know how to use and the pot of sap glue he did know how to use. Under a heated glare from Tibbs, he took his knife to the handrail of the ship and peeled off a thin strip of wood.
Just what you think you're doing?
I told you I wanted to get this ship for the doppel.
And?
Well, as sure as the pits can't just fly the thing to her. That would be too risky.
He sat down alongside the sailcloth and rope with his pilfered wood.
She called herself an illusionist, was very clear on the point. I didn't think much of it at the time, but...
She keeps the old ways.
Uh-huh.
You building a Katari signal kite?
As close as I can get. It should be enough to get her attention.
Deaton spread the sailcloth out, and Tibbs handed him his charcoal without asking. By pulling the rope tight between them, they managed to draw the straight lines of a diamond-shaped kite onto the cloth. Deaton pursed his lips, poising the knife with care over the first mark. Tibbs knelt down to hold the cloth steady as he cut the fabric.
And what she shows?
Then we get her out of Aransa before Thratia can kill her. And hope her Velathian buddies consider her absence proof enough Aransa isn't in need of a purge.
Pelkaya stole away to the wall and pressed her back against it, trusting to the shadows as a small group of interlopers passed by. There were three of them, swords out and dark and wet. They passed through the entrance chamber without a glance back and turned into another leg of the hub. Those were not watchers. They were not hub workers. Their tight slate-gray coats were unknown to her. What would Galtro do if his station were under attack? Outside of the Selium containment chamber, the records room was the sturdiest in the place. It rested close to the heart of the hub, its back wall shared with the containment itself. There he could hunker down and hide amongst the shelves, or make his stand at the bottleneck of the room's single door. Yes, that's where he would be, if he's still alive. She flitted out into the hallway and began the circuitous path across the steel floor toward the records room. Insofar as she could discern, the three gray coats were the only other souls left standing. She passed so very many of the dead. The administrative staff of the hub, bleeding their last, in the dark, over a power squabble in which they held no sway. After the third, she stopped taking the time to check their faces, to look for some hint of familiarity that would allow her to carry the names and deeds of the deceased in her heart until her own time came. They were just too many, and she was well overdue. The door to the records room was locked, but she hadn't expected it to be any other way. A soft light emanated from under it, throwing warm beams over her boots. A pair of feet cut through that welcoming light, casting sharp shadows.
Sir? Are you in there, sir?
As she watched, the shadows beneath the door shifted. The man behind ducked down, checking the boots of the voice at the door, and found them to be the footwear of a man who worked the line. State-issued and stained in black dust.
Hurry up, man.
Galtro glanced at the man, then turned away to move further into the room. Suddenly he stopped short, realizing that the face was not familiar. Eyes wide, Galtro brought up his bared length of steel, clutched in two steady hands, and turned to face the newcomer, who still stood near the door.
I know all my men, and I don't know you.
With a twist of her wrist, she dropped a throwing dagger into her waiting palm and sent the weapon spinning. The blade buried itself to the hilt in his guts. He took one hand off the grip of his blade and reached down, his eyes gone round with shock.
Was that really necessary?
She took a step away from him, her back pressed up against the cold edge of a file shelf. Tangled in uncertainty, she drew her long knife and braced her stance.
It's what I came here to do.
I see.
Galtro staggered backward and shot an arm out to lean his weight against the wall. He let the blade slip from his fingertips.
You're not Thratius, are you? You don't want those bastards in here any more than I do.
I care nothing for this city's politics. I came for myself. I work for no one.
Galtro slid down the wall until he sat with his legs straight out and his back propped up.
I see it now. It's always in the eyes with the grieving. I've seen so many eyes like yours. Weighted down with grief so heavy they start to look empty. Like all other emotion has been squeezed out. So, who did you lose? Come on now, mister. I don't recognize your face, that's true. But you must have lost someone here. This is revenge, isn't it? Well, that's all right, really. I know I'm not leaving the hub alive tonight. And I'd rather someone like you get me than Thratia's muscle. So, which is it? You lose someone on the line or in the mine digging?
The line.
You're proud. You're right to be. It's a hard job. But I'm sure you're aware of that. Can you tell me something?
What?
The name. Whom did you lose? Might as well tell me. I'm not leaving here tonight. I just want to know the name.
Why?
I want to know which ghost caught up to me after all these years. Haven't had a fatality in over a year now. So you must have been planning this a long while. What was the name?
Kel. His name was Kel.
Well, good lad he was. I was sorry about what happened to his line. Though I don't think it could have been helped.
Stop there, Galtro. I know it was an accident. But you put them in those conditions, you and Fard, and your deals with Valathia.
It's not kind to make a dying man laugh, you know. And no, I wasn't about to feed you any of that bullshit. Of course it wasn't an accident. Whole lines of good workers don't get wiped out due to an oopsie.
You're lying.
Shit. Why would I bother? Kell and his line did some work loading a special ship bound for Valathia. You think that's a coincidence? And anyway, I told you I know my crews, and I know for a fact Kell didn't have any family in his life, save his mother. So who in the pits are you? A lover?
None of your business.
Fine. Fine, keep it to yourself. I don't need a guidepost to see it. The boy was talented. And now that I'm looking, well, I see where he gets it from, eh? That's fine work. But you'd better get the pits out of Aransa after this, lass. The Scorched is not friendly to your sort. And Thratia would love to get her claws in you.
I consigned myself to death when I began this.
Death? You think they're just going to string you up? You think they'd really toss off such a valuable asset?
I've seen the executions over the years. Men and women I knew as illusionists beheaded on the guardhouse roof. They were as strong as I, if not stronger, and they weren't preserved.
And these strong doppels you watched die, don't you think they could whip up a mask, cover a tramp's face with their own, so the cruel and unsavory die while the valuable are whisked away into obscurity?
No illusionist would agree to such a thing.
They have no choice, woman. This is what I'm trying to tell you. Once in Valathia, Sel cannot be simply found or siphoned. It is tightly controlled, and the doppels even more so. Stronger the power, stronger the need, or so I'm told. How long do you think you could stand it, not touching Sel? I see you understand. Look, let me cut to it. You don't want Thratia getting her hands on you. And I need a favor.
What makes you think you're in any position to bargain with me?
Lady, you know full well those are Thratia's thugs out there looking for me. They'll kill everyone who steps foot in this place while they're here, stomping out possible witnesses. And for what, do you think? She's got the wardenship bagged. I'd never win it.
She wants an excuse to seize control immediately.
Right. She's convinced there's a live-blooded doppel in this city, and she wants you for herself. So she'll frame you for tonight's slaughter. Use it as an excuse to clamp down and start a hunt for you. You won't make it through that net, lass. When the folk of Aransa see some of their mining boys and girls dead, well, they won't care too much about my hide. But that'll hit home.
What can I do?
You make damn sure the corpses of Thratia's men are found with the others, you understand? Rat out her little game. Can you do that?
It'll be a pleasure.
Ah. When the old Mind Master's eyes emptied of life, she stepped forward and took back her dagger. She cleaned the blade against his shirt and brushed his eyes closed with her fingertips. Fists clenched, she stood and surveyed the records room. Somewhere in the bureaucratic minutiae was evidence of Valathea's treachery. An order for Kell's line to load the special ship, an order for the very same line to meet its end. She grabbed Galtro's fallen blade and stole away into the shelves to crouch behind a thick wooden crate stuffed full with yellowing paper. She stole a glance while the men were still getting their bearings and saw the three that had passed her in the hall earlier, two swordsmen and another with a crossbow out. Pelkaya hefted the weight of her throwing dagger in her hand.
Kell's already dead.
Makes our job easy.
No, it fucking doesn't. Who killed him?
I don't know. Maybe he pissed off one of his people.
Whatever. Let's just stuff him with Cell and get out of here.
Ugh. We'll have to patch that new hole he's got.
Shut up, both of you. The door was locked from inside.
Pelkaya ducked her head down low to peek through a tiny crack in the shelving and saw the crossbowman step closer to Galtro, putting his back against the wall as he surveyed the cluttered shelving. The other two fanned out, advancing, not yet close enough to get within reach of her. She let the first dagger fly. Pelkaya sprang to her feet, and the second dagger whipped free. It went wide, opening the sword arm of the trailing man. He dropped his blade, grasping at his opened flesh with his working hand. The other man closed on her, bringing up his blade high and wide. She parried with Galtro's sword and stepped back. Her retreat bore her into the shelf behind. She just barely made it under the arcing steel. His fist connected with her side. She lurched sideways to compensate. The arcing blade bit back down, notching her shoulder. She slashed out, slicing through the man's guts. Sparing a moment to kick the fallen man's blade away, she freed another dagger and launched it at the wounded man lurching toward her. It stuck in the hollow of his throat, buried deep. Pelkaya leapt over the fallen man and swung around the corner of the shelves toward Galtro and the crossbowman. She had Galtro's sword out and ready, but the crossbowman was already dead. She threw the blade aside and bent to rest her palms against her knees. Forcing her chin up, she surveyed what she'd done. She plunged back into the jostled shelves, scanning the carved faces of the boxes. Years ago, when she'd been taken off the line for her faked injury, they'd kept her working down here. Fingers still smeared with blood, she tugged out the box of reports from the month in which her Kell had died. She paged through until she came across the week of the accident. She yanked the relevant cluster free, spilt its temporal neighbors to the floor, and opened the folded packet. There it was, the official accident report. The details were brief, a break from their usual precision. She knew only what she'd been told. What Warden Faud had told her when he'd knocked on her door with his hat in his hands. A landslide. No chance of survival. Terrible accident. Word for word, the story she was looking at on the report now. Accident reports were messy things, scrawled over and over again with bits crossed out and rewritten as the details of the event became clear. There was no evidence of revision on this slip. It was pristine. Perfect. They hadn't even bothered trying to hide that it was a forgery. A familiar signature scrawled across the bottom, a so-called witness, Thratia Ganal. And Pelkaya's revenge had cleared the way for her, made it easier to take power. Trembling, she shoved the folded papers into the waistband of her son's pants. She wanted nothing more than to dive back into those files, to spend the night digging up any hint of a name who'd had a hand in what had been done to Kell. But she couldn't be caught here, surrounded by so much death. Couldn't let innocent mine workers find her, witnesses that would have to be wiped out. There was little she could do now except escape, take this knowledge with her, strike back, and this time, at the arachnidan hand that deserved it. Banch loomed at Ripka's side, a handkerchief shoved up against his nose. The four corpses had been left sitting no more than a half day, but even in the cool interior of the hub, the desert heat had set them to festering.
Those are Thratia's men.
Galtro was dead. That three of the four corpses were Thratia's people brought her no comfort. She had hoped the Watchers found dead in the hallways of the hub would be the worst of it. Two Watchers hovered nearby, awaiting direction, the shock of finding their fellows dead still fresh on their young faces.
Check the bodies of Thratia's men for any weapons which may have inflicted the wounds we've discovered so far.
You think Thratia had a fourth man here? One who got away?
Could be. But why leave the bodies of the others behind?
Maybe couldn't get rid of them quick enough.
Maybe.
You're not buying that, though.
No.
Well?
Ripka forced herself to survey the wreckage of the room for the fifth time since she'd set foot in it. It was her job. She was good at it. She would find the answers. She had no real way of knowing who died first, but the way Galtro sat with his back against the wall marked him as different than the rest. The three were all looking away from him, their bodies angled around a point within the record shelves. It didn't make sense to her that Galtro would deal all three of them killing blows and then slink over to bleed his last against the wall. And then there were the footprints. There weren't many, and most were smudged beyond recognition, but a single set stood out amongst the uniformity of Thratia's people. A pair of work boots. High quality, sturdy construction by the tread of them, had left a set of prints behind that didn't match up with any of the feet still in the room.
I think they were all surprised. Every last one of them.
Captain?
Watcher Talon poked his head around a shelf.
Looks like there's some files missing back here.
Good work, Talon. Take note of all the files near it and the nameplate on the box.
That won't be necessary.
The would-be warden strode into the room, surveying the remains of her men.
Pardon, Thratia, but we are in the middle of an investigation here. I understand you may have known some of the men involved, but it is our prerogative to get to the bottom of this mess.
May have known? What, Captain? These three fine souls were some of my best. I sent them along to keep an eye on Galtro after I heard these terrible rumors of a double, and look what that got them. You, back there.
She jerked a finger toward Watcher Talon and his partner.
Leave what you're doing and get out here.
Skies bless them. Her two rookies lingered, hands hovering near the handles of their cudgels, just at the edge of the shelf. They'd stopped what they were doing all right, but not out of any desire to obey Thratia. They were wary, knees tensed and shoulders squared, waiting for direction.
I am sorry that you lost good men, but the situation is such that I must ask you to leave.
Ask me to leave? You got it backwards, Watch Captain. Seeing as there's no longer any competition for the wardenship, I'm within my rights to assume control of all warden duties until such a time as the election can be properly held. Isn't that right, Kalia?
Ripka startled as she caught sight of the Valathian noble standing two short paces behind Thratia. Kalia was a willow-thin woman of impressive height, her overstretched limbs swathed in a flowing silken material that Ripka suspected was far too unbreathable for the desert climb. A girl approaching her blossom years hovered in the Imperial's wake, wrapped in the same sky-blue silks her mistress wore, a folded parasol tucked under one small arm. The girl's complexion was lighter than her mistress, betraying deeper Qatari intermingling than either Thratia or Kalia. Ripka assessed her as the Imperial's pet sensitive and gave the girl a tight nod. The girl didn't even blink. Over Kalia's fine silks, she wore a long white coat, the hem of it just grazing the tops of her knees. White coats were the Empire's special investigators, though Ripka knew they preferred to call themselves researchers. The Imperial smiled, no doubt catching the startled recognition in Ripka's eyes.
I am from the scorched diplomatic delegation, and it is within my authority as an instrument of the Empire to assure you, Watch Captain, that Thratia is within her rights to claim the wardenship. Although we would prefer she call it a regency, at least until such time as the elections can be held.
As you wish, I obey, diplomat. But regarding this incident, my team are equipped and experienced for just this kind of puzzle. If you'll allow me until tomorrow morning, I believe we can uncover the cause of this mess.
No. It is within Thratia's authority to seize control of this investigation, and not within mine to limit her. I recommend consultation between both divisions, but that is not a Valathian order.
Kalia bowed, Valathian style, with her hands held before her head, palms facing the blue skies.
Nothing personal, Leshy, but I want a crack at this tick of a Doppel.
Do you have reason to believe the Doppel did this?
Look around you, Captain. It's a mess.
The Doppel is clearly targeting important figures of Aransa. And when I take the Warden ship, it will be my head that has a target on it, if it doesn't already. You may take your people and go. My own investigators will arrive with the next ferry. See that everything is left as you found it. I will call upon you if I need you.
Warden, I must insist that the Watch be allowed to do its job here.
Banch's hand settled on her shoulder. She hadn't realized she'd taken a step forward. Banch tugged her sleeve, urging her back.
I have heard you. Now go.
Across the gap, with the city's bedrock firm under her feet, Ripka had dispersed her people back to their homes and stood thinking, arms crossed snug over her chest. It was a moment before she realized Banch was still at her side, watching.
What?
You're planning something.
Of course I am. Galtro's dead and something needs to be done about it, damn it.
Thratia said that
Thratia wants the city and the Doppel. She doesn't care about what's right. Pits below, Banch. Did you see our people? Opened with swords and crossbows, not daggers like Thratia's and Galtro.
You think her people killed ours?
Yes.
Then you'd better keep your nose clean of it.
Go home, Banch.
I'm your sergeant, Captain. I stay.
You've got a family, don't you?
Yes, but
go
this is...
Go home. That's an order. And on your way there, stop by the station. Tell everyone to go home and lock down. Thratia's taken the reins, and there's no telling what she might do. Aransa's not safe for the Watch. Not tonight.
You stay safe, Captain.
I'm working on it.
Banch turned crisply on his heel and strode off toward home and shelter. Ripka went home before she went to the station and changed into the brown-washed clothes of mourning. She would not do what she was about to do while wearing her blues. The black cotton was pounded smooth by stones, and the supple fabric covered her from throat to foot. It was a variation on an old Qatari tradition, or so her mother had told her, though the original rites were long since lost. In the brown wash, one donned their blacks and stole an item of personal significance from the house of the deceased on their pyre night. Galtro would have no pyre night. Ripka suspected Thratia would chuck him into an unmarked grave or garbage burn to keep from establishing a site that might turn into a symbol for martyrdom. That was all right by Ripka. She'd never been much of a traditionalist. She'd find her own way to mourn. A way that involved punching Thratia right in her smug little mouth. The black cloth made slipping through the city unnoticed easy, and she found herself walking through the station house's door before she had a plan firmly in mind. The station was quiet, the lamps snuffed and the halls emptied. Papers were left in haphazard stacks on desks, half-drunk teacups gone cold beside them. At least someone had remembered to lock the door on their way out. Probably Banch. She drifted through the darkened halls by rote, found the aisle of long-term inmates, and reached for the lantern she knew would be there. With care, she struck her flint and lit the already charcoaled wick, coaxed a small flame into life. She was seeking a recent addition to the prisoners. The unnamed woman's cell was second to last, a palm-sized piece of wood with unknown number 258 hastily tacked in place of a name placard. Ripka ran her fingertips over the number, wondering at the motives behind the 257 who had come before this one. Most were long before Ripka's time, but in her experience, few kept their numbers long. The last, however, had kept his number until his death. Unknown number 257, the Doppel caught impersonating Mercer Agert. She resolved that this woman would not die in obscurity. Ripka hung her lantern from the hook above the small window in the wooden door, placed so that it was just out of reach of the inmate, but still close enough to cast some light into the cell. Then she pulled a heavy metal key from her pocket. Unknown lay with her wrists chained on the bench opposite the door, curled on her side with her arms cushioning her head. Lank, greasy brown hair streaked her cheeks, and the whites of her eyes glinted wide and wary.
Is this a personal call, Captain?
I need answers from you. Evidence.
I've been through this about a half dozen times with your lackeys. I've got nothing to say, and you don't have the spine to force it out of me.
You're right. We're not interested in forcing answers from you. We're not brutes. Though I'm sure if the situation was reversed, Thratia would have cut the answers from you by now.
Never said that's who I worked for. But I'll tell you this. I would have cut the answers out of you myself if the tables were turned.
Charming.
Ripka moved the key very slowly to her pocket and gave the button flap a hasty loop. She stood there alone, unarmed, the key to the cell protected by no more than a flimsy piece of cloth.
Well, Captain Leshy, you are the clever one.
Does that mean you'll answer my questions?
Maybe. What it does mean is, I'll take you up on your offer.
I'm not sure what you're...
The woman lunged. She grabbed Unknown by her outstretched arms and pivoted at the hip, swinging the over-leveraged woman into the wall. Unknown turned to face her and lurched forward, fists raised, and forced Ripka to circle around lest she let the woman get within her guard.
You surprise me, Leshy! An upstanding woman like you starting a fight with a prisoner, huh?
You attacked me. What's your name?
Oh, is that how this works? Blow for blow, huh? I guess you earned it. Name's Dekka.
She landed a jab on Ripka's right side so hard she stumbled back. The great wooden door of the cell slammed into her back. Dekka charged, turning her body wide to come across with an uppercut. But Ripka shoved her hands down and grabbed the iron loops protruding from the door at hip height. Bracing herself, she drew her knees into her chest and kicked out with both feet, sending Dekka reeling to the floor. Ripka dropped the loops and fell into an awkward crouch. Dekka lurched to her feet. She charged with both her hands held up in a hammer blow. Ripka scurried away, crawl-hopping like a rabbit, and grabbed the bench Dekka had just abandoned to pull herself to her feet. Ripka whirled and somehow managed to get the chain that bound Dekka's wrists caught in one hand. She swung her around and then pulled. Dekka's back slamming into her chest. And they went staggering backward until Ripka's back slapped the wall. They fumbled and grabbed and twisted until Ripka had one elbow snapped tight around Dekka's throat and the other pinioned her arms. The blasted woman's legs flailed, clubbing Ripka's shins with her heels. Ripka pushed forward and spun around, slamming the woman face first into the wall. Ripka held the squirming agent of Thratia against the cold yellow stone and fought back an urge to break the woman's neck.
Who is supplying Thratia's weapons?
Go fuck yourself!
Ripka tightened her elbow, felt the woman spasm, then eased the pressure.
Again.
Some bitch-faced Imperial.
Why? What does the Imperial get?
I don't...
Ripka squeezed. Then she eased her hold.
Oh, shit! Freaks, all right!
Any fucking sensitive she can round up. She's not happy about it. She wants to keep one for herself.
A smile broke across Ripka's face. Perfect. If Thratia wasn't happy, that meant somewhere she was keeping records. Keeping notes that could be used to turn against the Imperial should the need ever arise. If Ripka could use them to destroy the Imperial's authority, then Thratia would have no official backing, no claim to make on the wardenship, and the people wouldn't be too pleased either to hear proof she dealt in human trafficking, even if the poor souls being bought and sold were deviant sensitives. But first, she'd have to prove to Kalia that Thratia was planning on holding out on her, drive a wedge between them so she could investigate deeper.
The records of these shipments, where are they kept?
I don't...
She squeezed.
Where?
I really don't know. Shit. The compound, probably. Where else?
That would have to do. Ripka dropped her hold on the woman's chained arms and shoved her against the wall as hard as she could. Dekka struggled, but Ripka leaned the whole of her weight against the weakened woman and was able to pin her in place. She fumbled one hand through a pocket and pulled out a small clay bottle. Ripka broke the clay bottle against the wall and felt the sticky resin of golden needle extract smear over her hand. The cloth folded within the jar, she palmed, shook open, and crammed into Dekka's mouth. It only took a few breaths before the woman went limp. After waiting to be sure the woman wasn't faking, Ripka eased her into a looser hold and half-dragged, half-carried her over to the bench. With care, she arranged Dekka's arms and legs, making sure none were folded in such a way as to cut off circulation. Ripka peeled the cloth from her mouth, yellow-stained linen flecked with pink blossoms of Dekka's blood. Her fist clenched, squeezing bitter droplets from the rag to the floor. It was done. The woman took no permanent damage. Ripka half staggered as she walked down the hallway. She paused, then steadied the lantern she carried. It was not torture, but that didn't mean it was right. Ripka clenched her jaw and turned, striding toward her office. Her weapons were there: cudgel, cutlass, dagger, and her files. She crouched before an overburdened file box. Even Thratia would have had to file building plans when she constructed her compound. Ripka found the yellowed edge of paper she sought and tugged it free. The lines of the plan were still bold and clear, even if the black ink was fading to brown. Before she set out, she wrote Decca's release papers, with the intention of leaving them signed on Banch's desk. If it all went sideways, he at least would recognize her authority come the morning. Something jarred Deaton's foot, thrusting him back into wakefulness. He snapped upright, half tangled in the mass of excess sailcloth and rope he'd been dozing on, eyes blurry as they adjusted to the gathering dark.
What?
Don't you hear that? Sands below. You'd sleep through monsoon season.
Exhaustion had driven them both to rest, and now it seemed night had well and truly come to Aransa. The lanterns ringed round the U-dock gave him just enough light to see by, and Deaton couldn't help but wonder who'd come along and lit them while he dozed. The little kite still drifted in the wind, tied to the rail at the aft of the ship, fluttering like a forgotten party streamer. He closed his eyes against distraction, trying to hear whatever it was Tibbs had picked up on.
You think it's a doppel trying to get in through the servant's entrance?
Well, let's find out.
As Tibbs loped across the gangplank with a small knife in his hand, Deaton cast around for a weapon of his own and came up with nothing. He had his knife, sure, but he was more danger to himself with it than anyone else. With a shrug, he snatched up the leftover sap glue pot and hurried after Tibbs. They crouched behind a stack of cargo crates that rested near the door. A slender woman stepped through, dressed all in black. The way the lantern was angled, he could only see her silhouette, but he felt certain from the confidence of her steps it must be the doppel at last.
Hello?
The shadowed woman dropped into a ready stance, head swiveling as she searched for the source of Deaton's voice. They were well hidden, he'd made sure of it, and the woman didn't have anywhere to go that he wouldn't see her. The shadow of the door obscured detail, but if she took a step in any direction, she'd reveal her face to the light. He figured the owner of said shadow had just arrived at the same conclusion.
Come on out now, into the light. No use mucking about in the dark.
A sun-dark face emerged.
Well, I'll be spitted and roasted.
It's the good watch captain herself. But no, wait.
Deaton slipped out from behind the crates and crossed to her in a few long strides. She flinched back as he approached, and he reached out and poked her in the forehead. There was no telltale ripple of cell.
Yep, the lady herself, in the flesh.
I'm going to pretend you didn't do that.
He looked her up and down, very slowly, so she knew he was getting the detail of it all filed away. The upstanding watch captain did not appear before him in her blues. Oh, no, sir. She was tipped from top to toe in black and had her hair pulled back. Dark purple bloomed over the ridge of her jaw, and she stood with her weight shifted to one side to ease some unseen pain. The watch captain had been in a real, honest disguise fight.
I'm going to have a hard time forgetting I saw this.
I suggest you do. I was just passing through, anyway.
Now, my dear captain, this is in fact private property, and while usually one would not bar the door to such an honorable slave of the common citizen as yourself, I must insist that you cannot go slinking about in the shadows of any private residence you so choose.
Great tunes, woman. The violation is unfathomable.
I'm not here in any official capacity.
A social call between the crates, then?
Not that it's any of your business, Haunding, but I have personal matters to see to here tonight.
Oh, got a date, eh?
I can and will throw you off this dock.
Fine, fine. Suit yourself. But I just cannot let you be seen running around at all hours in a get-up like that. It's ungentlemanly.
Oh, maybe, but...
Sweet skies, Tibbs! Don't sneak up on me!
Apologies. Well, as I was saying, it may be prudent for you and the watch captain to discuss matters somewhere a bit more secure. There was a guard making a regular patrol past this door.
Ripka half-turned and opened the door behind her a little wider. Deaton peered into the shadows and was surprised to see a slumped man leaning against the wall just outside. The man was breathing really slowly, a long line of drool wetting his twisted collar.
Thank you, Tibble, but the discussion is over anyway.
Fiery skies it is.
Deaton grabbed her by the elbow and dragged her away from the door.
Why are you here, Watch Captain? Specifically? And keep in mind, I'm on the security detail here tonight. I got rights enough to be asking. Rights Thratia'd be pleased as punch to back up.
Really? Thratia often keep her security personnel under guard behind locked doors?
Fine. Then why don't you just tell me out of the goodness of your lawful little heart?
Ripka shook off his grip and glanced about her new location, checking the shadows, but poorly. All she was seeing was shapeless dark, but he saw the barrels, the dust bunnies, and the stray ropes.
Blasted skies, woman. You're damn near freezing, and it's clear as quartz you don't know a thing about sneaking.
Look, Handing, just let me do what I came here to do. Then I'll get you two out of here.
It will perhaps help, Watch Captain, if you were to inform us of what exactly it is you came here to do.
You are aware that mine Master Galtra was found murdered this afternoon?
Sorry to hear it, Captain. He was a fine man. Even a lout like me saw as much.
Well, I appreciate the sentiment, but what I need now is action. The scene of the crime looked wrong, and I'm certain there were some files missing. Since it's clear enough you won't stop chewing my ear unless I tell you, well, I'm here to see if Thratia's got those files squirreled away somewhere.
Wrong how?
Handing, I really don't have the time for this.
Come on, just walk me through it.
All right. I'll walk you through it, as you put it. Through the front door of the hub, and there's dead blues on the ground, laid dressed with swords and crossbows. Into the records room, and the shelves have been tossed. There's Galtro, back against the wall in a pool of his own vitals, with a poke hole in his belly. Three dead men in the room, all Thratia's, and they'd been done in with a mix of daggers and Galtro's sword, which she found further off than he'd ever been able to chuck it. So there is
Wait,
something...
Wait, now, what weapons had Thratia's men got?
Swords and a crossbow.
I see.
I reckon you do. Now, if you don't mind...
Oh, now, Captain, I am sorry to press, but there appears to be something you're not sharing.
What? You want me to tell you what color pants they were all wearing? Pits below, you've got the thrust of it already.
Yes, quite, but forgive me if I'm not convinced that all that was enough to send an upstanding servant of the populace on a break-in and entrance spree.
I'm just not certain on the other thing, all right?
Let us examine it then, Captain.
Fine, fine. There were footprints in the blood that didn't belong to anybody. Workman's prints. Big flopping boots with the weight all rolled down in the toes. Not to mention their eyes were all closed. You ever see four men dead all at once and not a one left staring at nothing?
Mm-mm. Somebody closed them.
Right. It must have been the doppel.
Sure. But that doesn't explain what you're doing here.
I gathered some information. There are weapons in the city being handed out to Thratia's supporters, smuggled in the bottom of crates. Valathian weapons, if what I saw is true of the bunch. And just how do you think she's paying for them all? It's not with grains. She wouldn't dare be so obvious.
It's a trade.
I have good reason to believe so, yes. I came here looking for a paper trail, something tangible. If Thratia's caught out selling humans, even if they're doubles, the people won't have her. Without them, she won't be able to keep her hold no matter what Valathia does. And I don't believe the Empire will want to be publicly connected with her once that comes out. The slavery of doppels is illegal, even if they turn a blind eye to it when convenient. But I need evidence of her network. I need the names of everyone involved.
Thratia didn't just need the doppel dead, then. She was worried about a different kind of contract. Deaton locked eyes with Tibbs, and his friend gave him a subtle nod. Trading a doppel, a live deviant sensitive of any variety, meant only one thing. Whitecoats. Valathia may not publicly hold with the live trade of sensitives, but a little slavery in the name of experimentation, of progress, wasn't beneath them. Oh no, deviant sensitives weren't to be suffered to live so long as they were free. But pinned to a board like a butterfly, sliced open and pieced back together again to see how they worked, how they could be used, that was all right by Valathia, just so long as it was their white coats doing the slicing. And they were here, in Aransa. Had to be, if Thratia was dealing with them.
Hunding?
Tibbs had his fingers hooked in Deaton's shoulders.
Sarah?
He shook him once. He stared at Tibbs, seeing nothing but the webs of wrinkles radiating out from his old friend's calm brown eyes. Tibbs raised a brow in question, and he nodded, stepping back. He was under control, for now. It wasn't the purge that had Thratia nervous. That'd be bad for Aransa, sure, but the city would recover. But even Commodore Throatslitter had mind enough to fear dealing with whitecoats. She'd had to have been desperate to make a deal with those monsters. Execution for the Doppel's crimes was one thing, but nobody deserved that, not even a madwoman. Understanding passed in a glance between him and Tibbs.
What is it?
Deaton shook his head to clear it and crossed to the edge of the dock, staring out at the city splayed below. Nothing seemed particularly out of place. He'd seen violent power upheavals before. They were bloody, drawn-out things. Fires in the streets and heads in the gutters. He didn't see any evidence of something like that brewing here, and for that he was grateful. When a city went feral, who survived the changeover was often a matter of pure chance, and he hadn't lucked through too much of late.
I should grab Tibbs and go.
But he couldn't do it. Couldn't leave her to what he'd lived through himself. Ripka's fingers coiled around his arm and pulled him around to face her.
Tell me.
Deaton couldn't explain. Not really. To admit knowledge of what happened in the Whitecoat's Tower would be to admit his cell sense remained, albeit in a twisted form. He decided on a path.
You're looking under the wrong roof.
Then where do you suggest I look? I've got no lead on the Doppel. All the information I do have points here.
Sure you do. You know just exactly where to look. You won't find your evidence here. She's too careful for that. But I bet old Galtro kept real precise records of every ship in and out of his docks, even if the cargo was sparse on the leaving, eh? And you said yourself the records room had been tossed over. Either there's incriminating evidence in there about her, or a way to identify the creature she doesn't want you getting to first. If you catch the blasted thing, then she can't trade it to Valathia.
Thratia's got the hub on lockdown while she completes her investigation.
If you would agree to suffer the Lord Hounding's company, Watch Captain, I believe Thratia's prohibitions will not prove a hindrance.
Oh, no, I'm not going to be seen breaking into a place with that rat.
Psh, you're one guard check away from being seen that way right now. Look, Rippy.
Watch Captain.
Right. I'm the man for this. It's clear as a still sky you don't know about the grayer side of life, and I've spent my days learning how to turn soot into salt, eh? I can have us in and out in a snap. That is, if Tibbs here is all right watching the Larkspur on his lonesome.
I believe I'll manage. I don't think the Doppel will be doing much besides laying low tonight.
Then it's settled. Come on, Rip.
Deaton brushed past Ripka and opened the door to the servant's entrance.
Out of the dark and into the shit with it then, eh?
You don't make a lick of sense, Hounding.
I hope that particular expression will not become clear to you in time.
They scurried through the ferry district, one scant level down from Thratia's compound, moving fast but not so quick as to draw attention to themselves. Every corner he turned, he half expected to run chest first into one of Thratia's gray-coated sycophants. They came to the end of a long row of shuttered and tarped food stalls, their owners skedaddled off to safer locales for the time being. He didn't blame them. Half the city had tucked themselves in for an early night, hoping against the gathering shadows that things would push on like normal come the dawn. They were probably right. Whoever held the reins of the city mattered little in the day-to-day lives of the common folk. Deaton slowed and reached a hand back to forestall Ripka. He edged up to the end of a large cart, poking his head around the side to get a look at the ferry station. It wasn't just graycoats minding the way. There was a small group of people, local stock every one, and they were all backed up at the docking gate for the ferry that went out to the hub. Between the group and the dock, tall, stern-faced Valathians in uniforms as pale blue as the skies of their homeland commanded stood at ease, pikes resting in the crooks of their arms.
What is it?
Best see this for yourself.
Deaton pressed himself back against the cart, giving her room to creep around without being seen.
What is the Empire doing here?
Deaton grabbed her elbow and dragged her back around the curve of the alley.
You tell me, Miss Watch Captain.
I try not to have anything to do with folk in uniform.
How in the pitch should I know? Thrati has cut me out of everything.
Shit. We'll have to keep low and to the lee side of buildings. Use the shadows as best we can to make the crossing.
Crossing? We're not getting on that ferry, Hunting.
Who said anything about a ferry?
Without a word of conference, they adjusted their path toward the lowest level of the city, toward that last wall between civilization and wide-open, hungry desert. They had to cross the Black.
They're everywhere.
Deaton glanced over his shoulder, ready to give her the rough side of his tongue, then stopped cold when he saw where she was looking. Not at the people and their homes, their markets and their washing. No, her keen eyes had plucked out other figures moving amongst the shadows and the leeways, keeping their presence felt but not seen. Shadows of hands held shadows of weapons, ready to become corporeal at any moment.
Just stay steady. They won't be harassing us any if we look like we're in a hurry to get where we're going. Chances are Thratius got them spread thin, and communication won't get ahead of us. Come on now. The gate's a few levels down, and then it's just us and the sand to the hub. Anyway, the way we're moving, they'll probably assume we're all on the same side. Bunch of pals, us and them.
Mm-hmm. You all right?
Right as rain in a monsoon.
They dashed across a wide lane into another alley, serpentining their way down the slope of the city.